Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $20 on the Steel MS-162 or MS-170 chainsaw. Real Steel. Offer valid through June 30th, 2024. See participating retailer for details. Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Welcome in, What's Right with Nick Wright, episode 222. DeMonze is back. Filippone and Parkins are gone. By the way, if you missed Friday's episode, the First and Pod crew, it's a podcast you should subscribe to, we're in for DeMonze. We also promoted my buddy Danny's book, Pipeline to the Pros. So if you guys want to check out that episode, all those details, that would be good. Also, as you can probably see right here, I've got what appears to be a broken hand. It's actually not a broken hand. It is a broken arm. I don't think I have brittle bones per se, but this left side of my body has, I have broken this hand, I have broken this arm, I have broken this collarbone twice, and I have two skull fractures, both on the left side of my head. That part, where are the skull fractures, I'm not sure, but I just feel better blaming the left side of my body. But I'll be fine, it's no problem. I didn't want DeMonze to be the only person who has to wear a plastic device in order to shower. I felt like that would be I'd feel badly for him in that regard. So I got your back there, pal. So that is something. So he's got a torn Achilles. I've got a broken arm. We're the most injured but best sports podcast out there, or we were the best sports podcast out there. And I will explain or discuss that in a moment, but first I must get to what missed the cut, because here is what is not on today's show. Not on today's show, Chris Middleton returns and Kate Middleton allegedly returns. Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce opening a steakhouse in Kansas City. That is exciting. I will be there for the opening. And I don't know if you guys saw the news yesterday, but LeBron James and J.J. Redick are launching a pod. It actually launched today. So this, DeMonze, before we get to the NFL news, remember last week how the producers were trying to cajole me, trying to convince me, trying to bait me into continuing an alleged feud with J.J. Redick? And I was like, nah, man.
Yeah, I do.
I'm not going to do that. I feel like that could be bad news for me. It's not something that I want to do. Well, did I know that he had a pod project coming with LeBron James? I don't know that I knew that, but I know that, you know, I have made it clear that I don't love when JJ goes on First Take and says this show is dumb, because my just feelings on it were then just don't go on the show. But the right stuff JJ does, like calling games or actually breaking down, you know, film or X's and O's for an audience that wants it, he's great at that. And now it seems like this pod with LeBron is going to be a lot of that. And so that'll be outstanding. And I'm also glad that I didn't, you know, further inflame an alleged media beef. But DeMonze, where are we starting with today?
So we're starting with Justin Fields. The Steelers obviously got Russell Wilson, and then I guess a week later or so, got Justin Fields. Fans have always been super high on Justin Fields, love that athleticism, but it seems that they couldn't get anything for him. I think they got a late round three pick for him. And another
day
story
three
of this.
Pick. No, not even day round three. Pick. Day three, round day six three. That could turn into a four. Go ahead.
I apologize. Even worse. So you've always been super low on Justin Fields. Who do you think is wrong on Justin Fields? Is it the fans or is it the league?
So I don't know. Listen, this is a somewhat complicated answer. So I don't know that I have been low on Justin Fields. I know that there was speculation last year before the season. Man, could Justin Fields be the NFL MVP this year? And I thought, okay, that's not going to happen. However, I also understand the allure of Justin Fields. The size, the weight, the 4.4 speed, and as I discussed on First Things First yesterday, he has had just enough stretches of not good play, as I hold my hand up like Mr. Claw and Inspector Gadget, of not just good play, but exceptional play that you're like, man, and he's young enough.
There's something there.
Because he was young when he came into the league. Justin Fields just last week turned 25. So he's young enough. And then you're like, man, do you remember, and I'll give you the exact games, the stretch in 2022 when he just seemed indefensible? He had a stretch in 2022 where the Lions scored 29 against Dallas. He had 210 total yards, not that many, I understand. Two touchdowns, no turnovers. I'm sorry, three touchdowns, no turnovers. The very next week, he ran for 180, had four total touchdowns. The very next week, he ran for 150, had four total touchdowns. So in that three-game stretch, the Lions scored 29, 32, and 30. He had a 108 rating. He threw seven touchdowns. He ran for four touchdowns. And he ran for 130 yards per game. You're like, man, feels like there's something there on a terrible Bears team. Then last year, right before he got hurt, weeks 4 and 5, he had a two-game stretch where he threw for 335 and four touchdowns. And then threw for 280 and four touchdowns. So he had a two-game stretch with more than 600 yards passing, a 130 rating, eight touchdowns, one pick. The Bears, you know, averaged 35 points per game in those two games. And you're like, man, I feel like there is a lot of upside here. So that is what people fall in love with. Now, obviously, the NFL has not fallen in love with it, given the fact that he was able to be had for a sixth-round pick that can turn into, at best, a fourth-round pick. Now, part of that is inexplicable to me in this regard. The Minnesota Vikings just said, Sam Darnold, $10 million to come play quarterback for us. $10 million. Justin's going to make 3.2. The Raiders just said Gardner Minshew, $25 million for 2 years, come play quarterback for us. That doesn't make sense to me, okay? I would rather take the shot on Justin Fields. I do understand, though, why teams are afraid of the lack of consistency. And so, does the trade market always make sense? Does it make a lot of sense that Trey Lance...
You also have to look at the team that he's coming from. Like, it's the Bears. So, I think that with a lot of other teams, it'd be a different look.
So I think that's why the Bears... So I think, Demonte, that's why the Bears tried to do him a somewhat of a solid and send him to a place he might actually be able to start. So I know they're saying Russ is the starter, and I bet Russ will be the week one starter, but I highly doubt Russ is the week eight starter. So I think that, now I do not buy at all that the Bears were offered a second or a third round pick for him, and instead, to do him a solid, they traded him for a sixth. I do buy that they were maybe offered a fifth round pick by a team that he wouldn't like. I used this example on TV yesterday, I use it again. Let's just say, we know the Bills wanted a backup quarterback because they signed Mitch Trubisky in free agency. Let's say the Bills called up Chicago and said, we'll give you a fifth round pick for Justin Fields. Do I think that the Bears might have said, you know what, send him to Buffalo where he has no chance of ever playing? We're going to, as opposed to sending him to Pittsburgh where he could actually compete, yeah, we will take a slightly worse return in that regard. But if someone had offered a second or a third, the Bears, I believe, would have taken it. Now, maybe someone offered a second or a third months ago, and the Bears waited because they thought they could get better and they overestimated the market. But here is the reason the Bears would feel an obligation to do right by Fields is, here was kind of his timeline, DeMonze. Year one, Justin, you're not going to start. You're not going to play. Andy Dalton's the guy. Take a year, Mahomes' path, to learn from the veteran. Justin Fields is starting by week three. So they throw him into the fire. Year two, the Bears intentionally wanted to be the worst team in the league. They traded away Roquan Smith. They tore it all down, took all their dead cap in one lump because they were trying to rebuild, which I understand, but he did not have an NFL team around him. Year three is where he has the least. They did trade for DJ Moore. They did get him the right tackle, you know, in the draft. They did add some pieces, but that's also where you saw some flashes. So I don't think they necessarily did right by him. I also don't think he's by any means proven that he's even a good NFL player. Right. What he has proven, DeMonze, is if it were to click in for him, he has an incredibly high ceiling. But the league pretty clearly said, we value a higher floor rather than the potential upside of a high ceiling. But I think he's going to end up being the Steelers' starting quarterback. I think that Russell start in the beginning of the year, Russ will be Russ, and then Fields will take over. All right, let's go on to Caleb. Go ahead.
Yeah, so obviously now that the Bears have traded away Justin Fields, it's all but obvious that Caleb Williams is going to be the starting quarterback and the first pick of the draft this year. So if he averages just 226 yards a game, he will have the highest quarterback passing average of any Bears quarterback ever. Are you willing to say that he'll be the greatest Chicago Bear quarterback of all time right now?
Well, if we say all time, Sid Luckman 70 years ago was a great
Sid
player.
Sid Luckman.
But if we're talking Super Bowl era, who does Caleb have to beat to be the best Bears quarterback of the Super Bowl era? The answer is Jay Cutler. So yes, I'm willing to say Caleb's going to be the best quarterback they've had in the Super Bowl era. The Bears have never had, DeMonze, a 4,000-yard passer. They have never had someone throw for 30 touchdowns. Daniel's asking me, after year one, he already be the greatest Bears quarterback ever? I don't know. I don't know if that's really possible because Cutler was fine. Jim McMahon, I guess, was the quarterback for when they won a Super Bowl. Rex Grossman took him to a Super Bowl. Like, he's not going to do those things in year one. I do think that they're going to be a playoff team. Think about it like this, DeMonze. The Bears won 7 games last year.
Yeah.
If you get the right guy as the number one pick of the draft at quarterback, don't we normally anticipate that guy's going to be worth 3 or 4 wins? That you're going to go from being 2-15 to 6-11, something like that? But the Bears won 7 games last year. They're drafting with Carolina's pick. And so he doesn't have to have the year C.J. Stroud had. C.J. Stroud was worth like 8 more wins. He doesn't have to do that for this Bears team. A Bears team that it should be noted. After they added Montez Sweat, they had a top 10 defense, and they went 5-4. They have D.J. Moore. They traded for Keenan Allen. They added DeAndre Swift. With the 9th pick of the draft, they are either going to be able to add Rome Odunze, the number 3 receiver, Brock Bowers, the best tight end in a couple drafts, or the 2nd best offensive lineman on their board after Joe Alt, or the best or second best defensive player in this draft. Because here is a weird thing about this draft that we'll talk about more as we get closer to draft season. If people are correct that four quarterbacks are going to go in the top 10, all right? So you've got Caleb, Drake, Jaden, and everyone loves J.J. McCarthy now. People think they might go 1 through 4 and certainly be in the top 10. So that's 4 top 10 picks at quarterback. Obviously, Marvin Harrison Jr. and Malik Nabers are going to go in the top 10. That's 2 receivers. Joe Alt, the franchise left tackle for the, he was with the Notre Dame last year. He's going to go in the top 10. So now we're at 7. People think Roma Dunze is likely to go in the top 10, and Brock Bowers, the tight end, might. So here, and that's with only one offensive lineman. So here's why I mention all of that. A team picking 10th, which right now is the Jets, and they probably wouldn't do this, but just follow me. You might be able to get the single best defensive player in the entire draft with the 9th, 10th, 11th pick of the draft. It's a very unique situation. If you want defense, you might be able to get the best defensive player in the whole draft, you know, at pick. You might be able to get the second best defensive player in the draft at pick 12. So it's a unique spot because it's such a wide receiver, tackle, and quarterback heavy draft. All right, let's go to the Cowboys.
Everybody's focused. All right, so the Cowboys have lost a lot of key pieces this offseason, and they've added nothing. You've always been super high on the Cowboys and think that they're going to be Super Bowl contenders next year, I assume. But they seem to have, like, how are they in any different position than the Bills are right now?
So I'm glad you bring up the Bills, because the Bills lost their entire starting secondary, Leonard Floyd, their number 2 wide receiver. The Cowboys cut Michael Gallup and lost Biadasz, Dorrance Armstrong, and we can say they lost Tyron Smith, but they planned to lose Tyron Smith. That's why they drafted Tyler Smith in the first round to take over for him a couple years ago. So I'm not going to act as if the Cowboys have had a brilliant offseason, but let's talk about other teams in their general vicinity. Teams that were playoff teams but didn't make the Super Bowl, and the offseasons they had. So I think the Bills had a worse offseason. The Dolphins, who lost their best defensive player, their second best front seven defensive player, who lost a right guard for $100 million he left to go to Carolina. I think the Dolphins had a worse offseason. Go over to the NFC. The Rams. I like the Rams a lot. The best player on their whole team retired. We'll get to him in a moment. I think that's a worse offseason. The Eagles have a glaring need of how awful their pass defense was and their overall defense was last year. They addressed it by signing a running back. So I don't think the Cowboys had a great offseason, but I think that they had kind of a what I would call median offseason, meaning they didn't add much, but they also didn't lose that much. Yes, some teams added a lot. Typically, the teams that added a lot are bad teams, and some teams lost a ton. Typically, those are teams like the Buffalo or Miami that took their shot and missed. And here's the one other thing I'll say about Dallas. People that are, at this point, rightfully skeptical about the Cowboys, it's because they don't trust McCarthy and Dak in the playoffs. Totally understand that. What offseason move could they have made that would have made those people be like, now I trust McCarthy
Didn't
and Dak
Prescott
in the playoffs?
Just restructure his contract? Or was that fake
news? No, so he opened up $5 million of cap space for him so they could have a little more free agency flexibility. Right. Now, if you want to crush, I'm fine with folks wanting to crush the Cowboys. I would just say wait on that, because your opportunity to crush the Cowboys is going to come in the next couple months when Dak Prescott gets a 3-year, 95% guaranteed $180 million contract extension, paying him $60 million a year. That's when the Cowboys should be susceptible to criticism. And folks might be like, oh my God, Nick, that's a crazy contract for Dak. It is, but we live in a world where Kirk Cousins, who is in the exact same tier as Dak Prescott, can be 5 years older than Dak, pop his Achilles, and get, because he hit free agency, the same amount per year as Patrick Mahomes gets, $45 million with $100 million guaranteed. And if Dak were to not sign an extension, he hits unrestricted free agency. So he's got the Cowboys.
I think Kirk Cousins would do better with the Cowboys than Dak would do with the Vikings.
Well, maybe, but here's the thing that I will say about that. The entire Kirk Cousins criticism is lack of big game and playoff success. Kirk Cousins won one playoff game ever. And well, no, I mean, that's also Dak's criticism, is lack of big game and playoff success. My point is their numbers are very similar and their critique is very similar. And Kirk is 5 years older and coming off a blown, or 4 years older and coming off a blown Achilles, and he's still got a great deal. That's why the Cowboys are so nervous about the idea of Dak hitting free agency and he's going to get this massive new contract. But the Cowboys have to sign Micah Parsons to what will be the richest defensive player contract ever. They have to sign CeeDee Lamb to what will be one of the four or three richest wide receiver contracts ever. And they have to extend Dak. That's why you can say they put themselves in a bad position, but I'm not going to kill them for not spending huge in free agency on Derrick Henry or Saquon or those types of guys when I don't think that would substantially change their destiny, so to speak. All right, next.
All right, Aaron Donald's retired after 10 years of terrorizing quarterbacks. So he's out of the league now. I actually saw a funny clip of him for the first time of him pressing Geno Smith and him screaming, "Oh my God," like a little kid.
Oh, yeah.
But now that he's gone, could you see Chris Jones reclaiming that throne as the most dominant defender?
Well, listen, I think Chris Jones was better than Aaron Donald last year. And as great as Aaron Donald was, I think that Chris Jones had already, I think, taken, as of the last 2 years, because Donald was injured somewhat 2 years ago, and then last year, as the best D tackle in the NFL. Now, most dominant defender, TJ Watt and Myles Garrett have something to say about that. But I do want to put Aaron Donald's career into context, all right? So, and let me pull up this list.
Let's do it.
First team All Pros Football Reference. I just want to get the exact list right. I had it the other day. Here, okay, got it. Aaron Donald, his final year at Pitt, DeMonte, won every collegiate award an NFL or a college defensive player can win other than the Heisman. He then walks into the league and his first year wins Defensive Rookie of the Year and is a Pro Bowler. He then plays 9 more seasons. In those 9 seasons, he is first team All-Pro 8 times. The one time he wasn't was when he got hurt. He won Defensive Player of the Year 3 of those 9 seasons. He came in the top 5 for Defensive Player of the Year voting 4 other times. So 7 of his 9 seasons post-rookie year, he either was named best defensive player of any position in the league or, you know, came in top 5 in the voting 7 of those 9 years. He also was the best player on a team that lost a Super Bowl but held the Patriots to 13 points in the loss. He then was the best player on a team that won a Super Bowl and on the final play of that Super Bowl hit Joe Burrow to win them their championship. What does 8 first-team All-Pros mean? It means you are on this list of guys in the Super Bowl era. Jerry Rice has 10. Anthony Munoz has 9. Reggie White, Lawrence Taylor, Bruce Smith, and Aaron Donald have 8. That is the complete list of the most active first team all pros, or not active, all time first team all pros. If you are making a Mount Rushmore of defensive players in the NFL, it is Lawrence Taylor, Reggie White, Deion Sanders, and Aaron Donald. He was that type of player, that dominant of a player, and was an unbelievable postseason performer and packed as much into a 10-year career as one could possibly imagine. I mean, for the context on having 8 first-team All-Pros in 10 years, I mentioned those other guys. Jerry Rice has 10 first-team All-Pros. He played 20 years, okay? So Anthony Munoz has 9 first-team All-Pros. He played, I want to get this right, 13 years. Pretty unbelievable by him. Reggie White has 8 first-team All-Pros. He played 15 years. Lawrence Taylor also didn't play for incredibly long. He has 8 first-team All-Pros. He played for 13 years. And Bruce Smith has 8 first-team All-Pros. He played for 19 years. Aaron Donald did it in 8.
Yeah, I was going to ask the average career span. So he had a shorter one and still got there.
I think 10 years is 10 years is a great NFL career. Most Hall of Fame players play longer, but he never really fell off. Like,
great.
Last year at worst, he was the third best D tackle in football, and a lot of people would argue he was the best. And so he's an all-time legend and one of the only players ever that is impossible to overrate. All right, quick break, right back, talk a little hoops, and play a game of Nickstradamus. What's right?
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details. Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $20 on the Steel MS-162 or MS-170 chainsaw. Real Steel. Offer valid through June 30th, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
All right, welcome back in What's Right with Nick Wright, episode 222. Before we get to Nickstradamus, there's a couple of NBA questions about last night and about moving forward you've got for me, Demonte, so go ahead.
Yeah, so last night, the two crazy dunks. First, we got Anthony Edwards, or Jalen Johnson. Did you see them last night?
Yeah, I did. We're showing you the Anthony Edwards and then the Jalen Johnson really putting Austin Reeves in a bad spot. Yeah, right. So I want to be very clear here. Jalen Johnson's dunk was awesome, and it's a brutal spot for Austin Reeves. It is not in the same stratosphere as Anthony Edwards' dunk. Anthony Edwards' dunk is one of the best dunks of the last decade. And Anthony Edwards now, in the last week, DeMonze, has the block of the year and the dunk of the year.
Yeah.
And his raw, primal athleticism is at this point maybe unmatched by anybody in the league. He is so much fun, man.
Yeah, and no, he's a star. The Jalen Johnson dunk, that was the first points of the game, though. That was crazy.
I mean, yeah, and it's a brutal, again, it was also the highlight of the night for the Hawks. But it's a brutal spot for Austin Reeves. But in my opinion, it is not in the same stratosphere, as I mentioned, as the Anthony Edwards dunk. All right, next.
All right, so you said Luka has a chance to be the top offensive player of all time. Well, Wimby is arguably already the best defensive player in basketball in a year, or in his first year, sorry. So yep. Tonight they're going to face off. Who do you see having a lasting impact on the NBA when it's all said and done?
The bigger impact, I mean, I'm gonna stick with Luka, but I will say Wimby has exceeded my expectations. Wimby does have a case for defensive player of the year this year, and I said if you remember that early on that I thought he would instantly be an excellent defender, but that he would struggle offensively as a rookie. He hasn't. He's averaging 21 points a game on 47% from the field and 33% from three. Like, that's fine. That's more than fine. 80% from the foul line. And he's leading the league in blocks by a mile. And his impact defensively, DeMonze, is understated by the numbers because of the number of shots people don't take because of, you know, kind of fear of him.
Impacting.
I saw that
he already has more blocks than 84% of NBA players.
You mean for his career? Okay, well, that sounds impressive. But then you realize, DeMonze,
there's a certain amount of people playing the games. A lot of those players are on the bench, not even on the court. I get
right,
that.
Right, exactly. I couldn't vote him defensive player of the year this year because the Spurs are not a great defensive team. And it's not so much about their win-loss record as much as it is, if you're going to be defensive player of the year, I need your team to at least be a good defense. And right. Rudy Gobert, as much as my criticisms as I've had of Gobert, he is the anchor of far and away the best defense in basketball. And so I think this is Gobert's award, and it'll be the fourth time he's won it, which I think will tie him with Ben Wallace and Dikembe. So shout out to Gobert in that regard. But Wimby is having a phenomenal year. I don't think we should understate the year Luka's having. I mean, Luka is quietly, if such a thing exists, averaging 34 points, 9 rebounds, 10 assists on 50% from the field. So he is his ability to dominate the game offensively right now is matched by really no one other than Jokic, and Jokic does it in a different way. Luka, to me, Luka's a better bet for durability, and offense is more valuable than defense. But Wimby is having as impressive of a rookie season as any player in the last 15 years. Easily.
Yeah, I was about to say, you said offense is more valuable than defense, but Wimby also, it's not like he's not decent at offense as well, right? When you tie it in, don't they?
You're 100% correct on that. He's not Ben Wallace. He is right now looking like he's going to be an excellent offensive player as well. And so maybe, I think a lot of people right now would say he's a better bet than Luka. I will not say that. Yet, in part because we have also seen Luka be one of the most deadly and consistent playoff performers of his era. The guy's 33, 9-8 averages for his playoff career, and he's been the underdog in every series he's ever played in the postseason. Every single one, the Mavs have been the underdog. His first year in the playoffs against the Clippers, his second year in the playoffs against the Clippers, and then his third year in the playoffs, they're the underdog against the Jazz, then the underdog against the Suns, the one seed, then the underdog against the Warriors. All right, time for Nickstradamus.
As the prophecy foretold, he hath returned. Some call him the third eye of third longs. Others call him the Messiah of the money line. Call him what you will. We call him Nickstradamus, the soothsayer of sports. All right.
DeMonze, since the All-Star. Great. I mean, that was really well done. I like that. Go ahead.
Thank you. I had to work myself up. Since the All-Star break, the referees have been letting players play. The tea leaves are saying a ticky-tack fouls famine is coming. Nixtradamus or mysterious forces trying to influence how the NBA is officiating. Sorry.
No, I mean, no, it's not mysterious. It's very obvious.
It's awesome.
It's great. And anyone complaining about this, like, why would they change it mid-season? Because it was awful. Because it was a bad product. Because guys would kind of diagonally meander into the lane and then just throw their bodies up and get a foul call. And now they fixed it. I mean, Ethan Strauss has written a few articles about this, and the data is in. In January, the average over-under for an NBA game was 232 points. Yesterday, like, set Vegas over-under was set at 232. Yesterday's games, the average over-under was 218 points, a 14-point drop in a couple months because the NBA, the refs started letting people defend again. It's better for the sport. It's more fair. And so I don't think they're trying to put their finger on the scale of who wins. I do think they are trying to put their finger on the scale of making sure their game is watchable. And it was when we had that month where guys would score 60 and people weren't that surprised by it, we knew we had lost the plot a bit. All right, next.
All right, the play-in may include the Lakers, Warriors, Suns, Mavericks, Heat, and 76ers. That's crazy. You've read the tarot cards, and know once in the playoffs, they could all be dangerous. Sorry,
buddy. Hold on. That word is tarot cards. Those are those cards.
It's not
your
tarot?
Mom is your mom's somewhat into. Where I shouldn't say she's somewhat into, but she doesn't dismiss them the way I think some would. Where like they're like, oh my god,
is it spelled with an extra R? Usually is tarot. I'm so confused.
I don't even know what word tarot is. I've never heard of that. I know of the word carrot, but the second T is silent. I've never heard tarot. Maybe I'm. Are you thinking turret? Like a turret gun? I don't know, but doesn't matter. Tarot cards are the cards that a psychic pulls them and it's like, yeah. Oh no, you got
it's
the
really
queen
sad
of hearts.
That it's what I was thinking that it was.
So what have but, I hold on real quick, Demonze. What have I've said this on the show before and I will say it again. I learned this from Dragonfly Jones on Twitter, and he is correct. People mispronouncing words should not be mocked because it means they learned the word by reading it rather than hearing it. If the first time you learn a word is because you read it in a book or you've read it before, you just pronounce it however your brain says it. If you're just, you know, mimicking what you've heard other people say. So I've got your back on that. But now back to the question about the tarot cards, because we got on a bit of a sidebar there.
Yeah.
You were asking me about which teams I could see going on a playoff run.
Exactly. All these kind of scary teams are going to be in the play-in. And they could all be sneaky dangerous. But Nixtradamus, which play-in team do you foresee going on a run?
All right, so let's start in the East. I think Philly and Miami are totally safe in that even if they both end up in the play-in, I trust those teams' abilities to navigate the play-in. They'd have to deal with Chicago, Atlanta, Indiana, who's falling apart, Orlando, which maybe could fall down but probably won't. I think those teams will be fine. And listen, you guys know how much respect I have for the Heat. And Philly, yeah. If Embiid's going to come back 2 weeks before the playoffs, maybe, you know, super glass half full. The hope is that he actually has more in the tank for the playoffs because he had this, you know, month plus off. The West is a very different story, okay? The West, you have right now, you could argue – So who's the best player in the Western Conference? It's Nikola Jokic, obviously, right?
Right.
Okay. If you want to say the second best player in the conference is Shea, fine. I don't know that I totally buy that, but he's got a very strong argument. After that, in some order or another, you have Luka, you have Bron, you have Steph, you have Kevin Durant, you have Devin Booker, you have Kyrie, you have Anthony Davis, and mixed in with them are Kawhi and Anthony Edwards, right? So seven of the nine players, basically 3 through 11 in the West, are in the play-in bracket.
Yeah.
And unless the Kings fall down there, at least two of them are going home before the playoffs start. The team that I believe the least in is Golden State. The team I believe the next least in is Phoenix. But if right now the 9-10 is Lakers, Golden State, so, you know, one of them is guaranteed to go home, maybe both of them eventually. And so
this is the same
situation
that happened a couple years back, right?
A couple years back, the Lakers Warriors were the 7-8. The Lakers beat them when LeBron hit that three when he got poked in the eye.
Yeah.
And then the next round, the next play-in game, the Warriors played the Grizzlies, and the Grizzlies beat them and sent them home. And that was kind of like the Grizzlies and Jazz coming out. Right. If I'm being honest, the NBA probably would really like if New Orleans and Sacramento fell apart. Now, New Orleans with Zion's playing really well lately, so it's not likely, and they've got a big lead on the field. And I like Fox, and I like Zion, but I think the NBA will be bummed if either Steph, LeBron, KD, or Luka, if two of the four are not in the actual postseason. All right, we've got one more? Yeah, let's go. Let's keep going.
Nostradamus. Nostradamus may have predicted the Great Fire of London and the Atomic Age, but you predicted some equally devastating disasters. Like the Chargers playoff collapse to the Prince and the Saints cap situation. Truly horrifying events. Nostradamus, which team's early playoff demise do you predict?
Do you have a guess here? It seemed like you were going to say something. But
I'd say the Chargers. I mean,
Oh, no. They're just talking about in the NBA. He's talking about the NBA.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
They're talking about the NBA. You're fine. I'll tell you right now.
Are you gonna say the Celtics?
No, I don't think they'll be early. I'm talking round one upset.
Right.
I think obviously the Clippers are ripe for an upset. Obviously.
Always.
And I could see OKC getting sent home, particularly if they draw the Lakers in round one. The Lakers have owned them, and the size and length of the Lakers has given them real trouble. So OKC, who's the one seed right now, and Shea has been unbelievable, and I like Jalen Williams, and Chet's been really good, I could see that going sideways on them. And so I don't think there would be massive upsets out east. So those are the ones that I would imagine. All right, let's do this. Let's take a quick break and then do a tiny bit of March Madness. We'll do that next. Quick break, right back. What's right?
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of steel tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now, save $30 on the American-made steel FS56 RCE trimmer. Real steel. The FS56 RCE is made in America of U.S. and global materials. Offer valid through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
All right, welcome back in. What's Right, We Think Right, episode 222. Not going to be able to do listener questions today because this show, if you're watching it, spoiler alert, it's not live the way our shows normally are. We recorded it about an hour ago, and now you're seeing it. So, Damonte, let's ask a couple March Madness questions and then get out of here.
Yeah, so maybe for the first time ever, the women's NCAA tournament is getting more notoriety than the men's. So, obviously, you got Caitlin Clark and those big stars over there. Better teams and more exciting storylines. No, I'm sorry. Nixtradamus, which tournament do you foretell being better?
The answer is the women's tournament. I mean, the women's tournament has stars. You've got South Carolina, Dawn Staley, the coach is a star. They're massive favorites. They also are kind of villains at this point. LSU with Angel Reese. Obviously, the biggest star in all of college sports, Iowa with Caitlin Clark. You then USC, Juju Watkins, who is tournament.
I've seen some clips of her.
No, I was going to say, but you need next year. You need to go to a game next year. I'll get you. I can't imagine they're that expensive. I'll get you good seats to a USC women's game. I want you to go see Juju. And so in college basketball on the men's side, it's just no stars. And so listen, the men's tournament, I'll be very clear here. The early rounds, the men's tournament will be better. It will be a higher level of play because the women's game is not yet deep enough for there to be those shocking upsets. The best teams in the early rounds of the women's NCAA tournament are really going to dominate the lower seeds. But the men's tournament, this coming weekend, is going to be phenomenal. But once we get to the Sweet 16, I'm way more interested on the women's side of things. All right, next.
March Madness is days away and everybody's busy making brackets except for you. Are you afraid that the non-believers will win if your soothsaying powers fail to produce a perfect bracket? Nixtradamus, do you see a March Madness bracket in your future? Probably
not. Probably not. Yeah. I'll be honest with you. I am not locked in to the men's college basketball game. And so I'm not going to gamble on it. And I'm just not that, you know what I mean? I could fill one out, just say I filled one out, but my heart wouldn't be in it. I'm too busy sending mock drafts to Brett Veach, which you guys can laugh at me about, but I literally am doing that on a weekly basis. I still spend at least 10 minutes a day when I'm scrolling Twitter. I come across some random Chiefs Super Bowl highlight, and I just watch it. I'm just still in the afterglow of the Super Bowl, plus prepping for the NBA playoffs. And I'm, just being transparent, more intrigued by the women's tournament this year. I've watched more women's college ball this year than men's college basketball. And so, yeah, I'll be a... party pooper's the wrong word, but I understand how much people love it, and I love watching the tournament. But I'm not going to act like I have strong... feelings or intuition on it when I don't. All right, great job, Damonte. Great job, everybody. Appreciate all the hard work everyone did to make sure this gets on the air. I'm on with Colin today. First things first at 3:00. Damonte, great work, and we will talk to you all later. Hey, it's Nick Wright. Thank you so much for watching. Please do us a favor. Click subscribe. It helps my ego, and Damonte's got a financial bonus riding on a number of YouTube subscribers, so help him out. And also, click the bell. I don't know what the bell does, but they tell me to tell you to click the bell. And your audio listeners, people that have commutes, drives, whatever it is, subscribe to the podcast as well, wherever you get the podcast. Same show, just in your ears instead of through your eyes. All that. Check it out. Appreciate y'all.